Ladies and gentlemen, it's that time of the week again. We are back with what musicians refer to as the difficult third album. And as always, I am not alone. I am joined by three other bastions of disability, humour and merriment. And as always, we're going to start off with a rather different looking Mr. Simon Sampson. How are you doing, Simon?
All right, Adam. Thank you. How are you?
I'm very well, sir. You're looking really... smooth, my man. Smooth as a baby's ass. What's going on?
Purely accidental. I was starting to get a grey beard. So this morning, I went to trim my little grey bits. And I didn't put the number 3 on the beard trimmer. And so I took a whole chunk just there out of my beard, not realising because I was still half asleep. And then I realised that I've got a whole chunk missing from my chin. So I thought, yeah, the best thing to do is not actually walk, you know, roll around town or anything with a big chunk out of my beard. Is to just shave it all off and let it grow back in a few weeks' time. So now I look.
It would have to happen right at the start of the beginning of freedom, wouldn't it?
I was excited.
The day you can legally meet people outside is the day you decide to twatify your beard.
Yeah, I can actually feel the wind between my cheeks. Yeah.
And on that wonderfully hygienic note, and also talking of fabulous beards. Duncan, my good friend, how the dickens are you?
I'm tickety-boo, my good man. Carrying on as normal, waiting for all this to end so that I can actually see human beings again. It will be wonderful.
You and me both, brother. You and me both. And last, but by no means least, he is the king of, among other things, ridiculous questions and PlayStation 5. How's it going, Chris?
It's going very well, but are you rubbing it in my face? I haven't got a PlayStation 5. I've only got a PlayStation 4. They haven't been in stock.
I haven't got one either. I can't get one for love, nor money, or sexual favour. I've literally tried everything.
That's hard to imagine. To get one.
I've got two PlayStation 4s because I can't be bothered to move them to different rooms. And I've been following the tweets from AO, Argos, Currys, and Amazon and other places to tell me when they're in stock at Smith's, of course. And they tell me when they're in stock, but by the time I get there, they're out of stock.
Yeah. I'm just completely flummoxed by the world of opportunity for inappropriate innuendo that comes from linking PS5s with sexual favours. What's the hard drive like? Is it a good joystick on it?
At this point, it's not even innuendo at this point, Duncan. I'm a desperate man who will do crazy things to get what he wants at this point.
Are we still talking the PS5 or are we talking the sexual favours now?
I don't... Why are we separating the two? they're very much interlinked.
We're celebrities and we'll plug PS5s on here each week until we get one.
That should have been my first idea, really, shouldn't it? Rather than what I went with. Anyway, like I was saying, difficult third album. Anyway, should we do some ridiculous questions?
Yeah, I prefer the name. Yeah, rather than stupid questions. Ridiculous questions sounds better. I will start with the first one. Here we go. If you could make a rule for the day that everyone had to follow, what would it be?
All taxes should come to me.
Taxes should go to you.
All taxes from that day. Everybody's tax for that day.
So no black cabs.
What?
Sorry?
Black cabs should come to me. I've just been watching this black cab killer thing.
I didn't know if you meant income tax or you meant like the travelling black cabs. So I presume, like, you want all taxes to come to you. You're going to have a queue of black cabs.
Oh, yeah. Tax S, not tax E's. God. Sorry, now I see the link.
It was funny. It was funny. You just didn't get it.
I got it, Simon. I very much appreciated it. However, my biggest concern there is, Duncan, what you would do with the money.
Buy a PlayStation 5.
Say, I can I use my disability to get a PlayStation 5, do you think? I use it for a number of things. So I say, I'm disabled. I need a PlayStation 5.
Are you asking our permission?
Why not? I'm numb.
Just do it. Just do it.
If you can get three more.
Yeah. Also, Simon, if I'm the guy that you have to come to ask if something's a good idea, you need to find a new guy. You're not just going to say yes to everything.
What's your answer, Adam?
A rule that everyone has to follow for the day. I'm just going to be like really, really simple. I just want one day in the course of human history where no one's a dick.
You could just scrap the internet for the day. You'd probably have more joy of everybody being nice to each other then.
Can you imagine how bored people would get though? Like, people have to like talk to their family. Like, I've gone days without talking to my family, and we're in the same house.
I've got a serious answer.
Okay.
I'm a very, very amateur astronomer. I mean, really amateur. And I would love to everyone turn off all their lights across the world for one day so I can actually see what the solar system looks like.
I love that answer.
That is actually a really cool answer.
Yeah, I really, really like that answer.
But I know my luck. If I asked for that, it would just be cloudy.
Yeah. Really switch the lights off. Can't see anything anyway. Question two. How much would you pay a hacker to not release your entire internet history to friends and family?
Adam, has your mum watched your Pornhub video yet?
No, but she's seen the actual film that the clip is from. And just because, if you're a new listener and you've got no idea what the hell is going on, first and foremost, hello. And secondly, that what Simon's referring to is a clip from a film and an actual released in cinemas feature film, not something I made myself on an iPhone. that just found its way onto Pornhub. I didn't do it. It's just one of those things. When life gives you lemons, you make lemonade or you go on Pornhub. I don't like lemonade. Let's end that analogy right there, because it clearly isn't working. And no, she hasn't. So I don't think I'd pay a hacker. I think at this point, I'm 36 years old. Most of my friends and family know exactly what's going on.
I believe you.
And unless you're really, really into, unless you regard Lego t-shirts and wrestling as problematic, then I'm pretty much in the clear.
I actually believe him. I think one of the... Out of the sneakiness, because Adam's an open book. We know what he's like. But I reckon it's one of you two. One of you two is going to pay big for this.
So my internet history is vast. It really is. And there's quite a lot of information out there about me because I run, you know, the most successful or most read disability page in the world. So I can't really hide.
But this doesn't really say what your browsing history is like. I feel you're evading. This is a very political maneuver. To avoid, but on my search history, you will find.
That's a really good point.
My search history is probably Groupon, YouTube, and that's probably about it, you know, and what my wife wants to put in the kitchen.
Clearly, Adam on Pornhub.
I'm very grateful I've not seen it. The first time I met Adam a number of years ago, he said he was on Pornhub with Scarlett Johansson. So, you know, he was bragging about it, not me.
I wasn't bragging about it. I was giving you a friendly heads up in case you did some background research before our interview. I didn't want that to be my first impression.
What story breaks first for you, Adam? Is it the Pornhub with Scarlett Johansson, or is it that you won Mastermind?
I'm gonna go with Mastermind.
You do.
I take that ridiculously seriously.
You do.
And Adam, you have your the disability that you were born with, and you also have the perception by other people. How do you deal with that?
I think you either deal with it or don't. It's kind of. If I don't beat this, this will beat me. And I can sit at home and like hug the dog and cry and listen to like Dido on repeat all day long. All that's gonna do is like really annoy the dog. So you put your head down and you live the life you have. I think the way to eliminate any kind of misconception or prejudice is to increase the exposure. And so the more we can see people with disabilities or disfigurements on the telly and the media doing kind of average things.
You make it almost sound easy, but you've got to be immensely strong to cope with that, haven't you?
The only way to change the status quo is to challenge the status quo. And if we always do what we've always done, we're always going to get what we've always got. And that's how change works. It's a slow process. It's baby steps. It's not going to be easy, but nothing worth doing ever happened easily. Yeah. Now, whenever I see another disabled person on there, and this is a little bit to do with my topic, I'm like, oh, I hope they don't win.
That's awful. Duncan, how much would you pay so that your entire family and friends wouldn't see any of your internet history?
I'd pay every penny I've got, which is about £13.68 right now.
If somebody came to your door and said, here's 10 grand, would you pay that 10 grand to stop the hacker releasing your internet history?
No. What they're going to find is Top Gear and weird pictures that I've found to insert on YouTube videos that we make. My search history is bizarre, but not entertaining. Because the amount of stupid ways you have to phrase things to find the right picture, you know what I mean?
I know.
Especially if anyone doesn't know, Chris and I do a thing called the Grumpy Dads, and we do this thing with Amazon reviews. Simon's been on it, and so has Adam, and we've done this, and you go through the different products and you can guess the product from the review, and then you've got to find these things, but you've also got to find people's guesses. And Chris has a habit of finding the most innuendo laden reviews in the world. And so then you have to go and look for a butt plug on Google, you know. It's
has nothing to do with me.
Oh no.
Yeah, I've heard those one-star reviews. Your internet search history must look like a who's who of what the fuckery.
That's why I have privacy set.
Why not answering these things?
I have privacy settings, so I don't have to pay any hacker any money, and no one finds out. Nice and easy, using my head.
You got privacy settings.
Well, what is it? I was just about to say innuendo settings, but that's not.
Do you mean incognito?
Incognito, that is the very word I was looking for. We're moving on to question three. You're a pro boxer. What's your ring name and music?
I'm going to go the ring name. I'm going to keep Adam Pearce, but you know, people have like a prefix, a midfix, and a suffix.
Yeah.
I'm going to be Adam, you should see the other guy, Pearson.
Right.
Just to instantly make the whole arena feel awkward at once. And I'm either going to come out two, I've got three, and we can all discuss these, because kind of hive-minding and all that jazz. Either PJ and Duncan, let's get ready to rumble.
Yeah, okay.
Chesney Hawks, I am the one and only. Or two unlimited, there's no limit.
I feel like you were sort of like prepared for that question.
Well, I feel that too. That was a very, very... I don't know, you put far too much thought into this previously, which is disturbing in its own right.
If you take out the word boxing and replace it with the word wrestling, you are correct. I have thought about this a lot.
Let's go with Simon. Simon, what's your ring name and what's your music?
Mate, if you don't come out to Limp Bizkit rolling, you've missed an open goal, quite frankly.
I was getting there, actually. I'm rolling. what would my boxing name be? Hell on Wheels.
Hell on Wheels. Yeah. I should have changed it to wrestling, really, but never mind. Duncan, what's your ring name and music?
Well, you got Dwayne The Rock Johnson. I think I'd just be Duncan the Play-Doh Casburn.
Okay.
That would fit the contrast in those particular two icons of the wrestling or boxing world. My music would have to be Manamana by the Muppets.
Oh, God. That's enough to strike fear into anybody.
And so now we have set people's expectations for the rest of this episode. Again, difficult third album. Simon, what is the first story we're looking at? this week?
The first story we're looking at this week is a woman called Storm Keating. Many people won't know the name, but she's actually married to Ronan Keating from Boyzone. And she was diagnosed with the same condition I am, which is corticoquinia syndrome, which means basically spinal damage for anyone who knows what it is. And if it's misdiagnosed and not treated within 24 hours, it basically leaves you paralyzed from the waist down, which is what I am. Hers was caught in time. And although she's going to have some side effects, probably for the rest of her life, she is on the road to a full recovery because she had emergency decompression surgery within the 24-hour time period. And the reason I wanted to raise this is, first of all, because nobody in the world, pretty much no, unless you're a doctor, knows what corticoquinia syndrome is unless you have it. But what people definitely don't know is it's the most paid out in compensation for the NHS each year, which equals the amount of £350 million every year of misdiagnosis of corticoquinia syndrome. So, because it's so underfunded, not researched well, and to spot it is an MRI, and you have to have emergency surgery within that 24 hours, otherwise you are paralyzed. So it has to be done extremely quickly. So by the time most people get to hospital, they can't do anything about it because they think they've got a bad back, and it's too late, but the damage has already been done. If you catch it in time, you can make a full recovery, which is what happened with me. They spotted it, but they didn't operate because they thought it was something else. So what I've done recently is I've contacted my local MP, Dr. Luke Evans. Luckily, he's a young doctor. He's in his 30s. And he knows all about corticoquinia syndrome, being a general practitioner. And so we contacted the General Medical Council together. And they came back to us and said there's absolutely no money whatsoever going into corticoquinia syndrome research. And as I said, it's costing the NHS £350 million a year. It's actually taken overpayments for stillbirths and compensation for stillbirths and people with issues when they're born, if they get brain damage or something along those lines due to complications. So that's pretty much what I've been doing, and I've been trying to raise awareness of this. I wrote an article on this to explain that. You can find it on abilityaccess.blog, and we'll put a link up to it. And if you click on it, it will tell you the details of that 350 million quid and where it's going, because it's going to people who have basically been misdiagnosed and had their life turned upside down like I did a number of years ago, to this horrible situation where people aren't trained enough on it, people can't pick it up quick enough, and then they don't follow the rules and regulations because they think it's something else, where even if it might be this, you start the procedures. You start the process of transferring that person to the spinal surgery, spinal hospital, and you get operated on as soon as possible just to make sure that it is not this. I mean, I prefer to have the operation than to be wrong, because that wouldn't do any harm, because it's decompression surgery, than actually having the disability.
What's the reason where they can justify spending 350 million on payouts, but they can't spend money on preemptively stopping those payouts?
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing as well. So what happens is if it's misdiagnosed, there's an automatic procedure in place where that patient should be transferred to, I mean, for my example, I should have been transferred to Nottingham Queen's Medical Centre and operated on within 24 hours. What happened was is the consultant didn't see the corticoquinia syndrome, and therefore we had to go through the whole situation of taking them to court. It didn't reach court. They did an out-of-court settlement. But I mean, my life got turned upside down. I mean, just for my example, we had to move house. We had to double our mortgage to buy a suitable accommodation. We had to buy wheelchairs. We had to buy adapted vans, we had to go down the motability scheme because obviously I needed a motability car. Couldn't work full time anymore. Completely lost my job. And that's when I set up Ability Access. And so it does vary considerably from different people. But I mean, even if you've got a minor situation where because it affects your lower part of your body, so it can affect your sexual function, okay, so you might not be able to have children, it will affect your bladder and bowels, which means you need to catheterize for the rest of your life, okay. Travel, you get shooting pains in your feet and legs, which means you can't get out of bed for a number of days because you can't walk on your feet and legs because it hurts so much. So the variations of what happens to your body after the injury is considerably different to everyone else, because you don't know what nerve endings are going to be impacted, because it could be level 2, 3, or 4, 3, 4, and 5 of your spine. So on mine, all three of them were corticoequina syndrome, and they can't operate and recover mine because they don't know which one is causing the damage, and they can't do all three because it's too dangerous. So they might leave scarring, and there's only a 46% chance of actually improving it.
Wow.
So I've been working on this for a number of months, trying to raise awareness of it. I sent an email. Duncan James had this. Again, he's fully recovered. He was in the boy band Blue. He had to have emergency decompression surgery. They got hit. They operated on him quite successfully, and he's fully recovered. But he's now the UK ambassador for corticoequina syndrome, because he never heard of it before his injury, and neither did Storm Keating. So unless a celebrity gets it, or has this horrible injury, nobody knows anything about it. And raising awareness of it is exceptionally difficult because nobody knows what it is. And one doctor said to me, it's the worst thing that could ever happen, and they never want to see it, and yet they're not trained on it properly.
So to your mind, what would be your ideal outcome from this campaigning?
From this campaigning, what I would like to do is see some funds going into corticoequina syndrome, because on how to, if it happens to them, also trying to create a technique that could actually do fully recover from it. Because although I've got no sensation from the waist down, things still work, although I can't feel it. Okay. So like, for example, I can move my foot, but I can't feel my foot, if that makes any sense. So I can't walk. Mm-hmm. But I can move my foot around. But on the other hand, on my other foot, it's called a drop foot, where I've got no sensation, no feeling at all. But there are still nerve endings down there that do still work. Okay. So, but the messages aren't getting through. So what I'd love to see is research into corticoequina syndrome, into spine recovery, because there isn't any money going into it at all. And if the NHS are spending 350 million quid a year in compensation, spend 100 million quid on research, on preventing it from happening, or if people do get this horrible injury, trying to make them, you know, recover from it and put some money into that, because eventually it's going to be a lot cheaper than paying out what is essentially billions over 10 years in compensation for something that might be, if researched, preventable. But we don't know this because there's no research into it.
And if there are people watching this who, I suppose I'm going to split into two camps, people who work for the NHS.
Yeah.
And then you're every person. How can they get behind this, and how can they help give this profile and lift up the voice of this whole thing?
Okay, so what they need to do is they need to contact Dr. Chris Evans, MP, and send an email to him and saying, look, I support Simon Sansom and your campaign to raise awareness of corticoequina syndrome. We are looking to raise money with the NHS Foundation to do extra training for doctors and nurses to spot early signs of corticoequina syndrome. And although they do get basic training for corticoequina syndrome, there's no advanced training. So it could be something as, oh no, I might have a slip disc, which is fully recoverable, of course, but that slip disc might be corticoequina syndrome. You don't know. You have to take it seriously, because it can happen very, very quickly, like mine did. I was walking one morning, woke up the following morning, I couldn't feel anything from the waist down.
So what I think we should do is start, do like a, I suppose, a template letter or email for Dr. Evans, get it up on the Ability Access website.
Yep.
So people can just download it, sign it, and send it away however they want to. I think that would be a good
absolutely
first step.
We will put a link in the description for this video for you to be able to go and do that at home.
Amazing. Anyway, shifting on very, very quickly. I was watching Celebrity Mastermind on Saturday, making sure a disabled person, who's a friend of mine, by the way, hello, Bryony, love you, didn't win. And Bryony Gordon, very dear friend of mine, hosts Food Unwrapped on Channel 4 and won the Christmas special of the Great British Bake Off. Like, phenomenal baker. Go check out her Instagram and all the stuff she makes. I love it a bit. She's great fun. And that got me thinking, gentlemen, what is your favourite cake? What is your go-to cake?
That's a tough one. Mm. I haven't really got a sweet tooth, but I think if I had to have a piece of cake, Battenberg. It has to be Battenberg. I like that you can sort of peel it and then you break it up into the four pieces. I always do it. So it's a bit of fun while you eat. But I haven't really got a sweet tooth.
So. Of course you bloody do. Oh, God. So Chris likes cakes he can play with like a fucking child. Duncan, what about you?
I don't like cake. It's my birthday.
I don't believe you.
I know. It's hard to believe when you look at me. Most people would think there's a man who loves cake. But I really don't. I don't know. Unless it's a really good cake. I do like a caramel mug cake, actually. But no one in England knows what they are. In Australia, they're like it's like a really rich, fudgy, caramelly, dense cake. They are. If I had to pick a cake, that'd be it. But it needs ice cream with it. It needs something to subtilize it just that little bit.
I am a huge fan of a lemon drizzle.
Oh, I do like a lemon drizzle.
Mm.
For a person who's hitting 40 and has been overweight for almost 35 years, I've had my fair portion of cake. However, I don't think there is a cake that I would overrule with if it wasn't for the chocolate flapjack.
Now, are we talking a flapjack with chocolate through it or a flapjack coated with chocolate?
Coated with chocolate, yeah.
I believe this week is Autism Awareness Week. Am I correct, Mr. Duncan?
You are indeed correct. And it's one of those things that gets a lot of people talking. It gets the autism community buzzing about certain things, and it should be called autism awareness. Should it be called autism acceptance? I can't weigh in on those arguments because I just like the fact that autism as a thing is getting into the public sphere and people are coming to understand it and appreciate it and see it and what it is. And one of my big bugbears is the lack of understanding that surrounds masking.
And for the uninitiated, what is masking?
So masking is something a lot of autistic people do. It's particularly prevalent in girls. So you'll actually find that actually only 20% of diagnosed autistic people are female. And that's not because autism is less common in females. It's because usually females are far more adept at masking. And masking is where, and you get it in schools a lot, and this is where the real problem lies for me. Kids will go to school and they'll mask, and it's literally the act of putting a figurative mask on. So they repress, they bottle up everything all through the day, and they're very compliant. So the school are like, oh, they're a dream kid, they're like angels, they're wonderful. And then they get home into their safe place and it all explodes and you get meltdowns and loads of anxiety and stress, and it all comes out at home. And then parents get blamed for bad parenting, and or the diagnosis doesn't take place because the schools are going, no, they're wonderful at school. They're learning loads and they're lovely kids. They're not having any problems at home. And it just leads to so many problems. And if more people and more particularly educational institutions, in my opinion, knew about masking and knew for the signs to watch, I think the world would be a much happier place, especially for the autism community.
What are the signs of masking that teachers or pastoral head of years, etc., should be on the lookout for?
It is tricky because it can vary, and it's subtle. But often I think if you've got the model student and parents are saying, we're having trouble at home, listen to that and suddenly think, hey, this could be what they're talking about with masking. For recognising masking, it's often things like repetitive words, so that you'll actually, it's like a rehearsed conversation almost. So if you're saying to the morning, you know, morning Stuart, how are you today, and every day he's like, I'm very well, thank you, and it's in the same intonation and using the same phrasing every time, mm-hmm. What you're actually getting is a learnt response, and he doesn't necessarily understand that what he's saying is, I feel tricky. He might be feeling like hell. He's probably feeling very anxious and he's bottling it all up. But the reality is that's what's happening. And so it comes across, yeah, he looked at me in the face and he said he was having a great day. But if you're getting that same thing repetitive through the through every day, every time you say the same thing, you get the same response back, usually with the same intonation. That's a real big sign that masking is taking place. And the damage it does to mental health down the track is huge. And I've spoken to a lot of autistic people who've told me that the mental drain that masking takes when you get to a certain age of thinking, people start to recognize they're doing it. It's not something they can control, but you come out of it and they're just exhausted because the mental effort it takes to mask that continually. And it's why you end up with these meltdowns at home, because they just can't contain it any longer. And when they're in a safe place where they can be themselves, out it comes.
And so speaking of the disparity between, as you said, model people at school, then things slide sideways at home. How important is cross-party communication between the home and the school?
I think really important. But it's not just communication. Like, communication is a two-way thing. And I think we often forget that, and schools forget that, but so do parents as well. It's got to be something where we kind of got two ears and one mouth, and we should be listening twice as much as we speak. And if parents are saying there's an issue at home, just thinking, well, they're doing bad parenting, I think is a cop-out. And that's not trying to insult anyone. It's just that it's the easy answer, well, the problem's at home. Whereas just a couple of moments, it's like what Simon was talking about with Corticonia syndrome, and the fact that if the right person had asked the right question at the right time, things would be very different for a lot of people. And I think it's the same sort of thing for that one person to go, they're saying there's problems at home, I'm seeing a model student at school, I'm going to have a closer look over the next week and just observe the behaviours and see if there's patterns here that I can pick up on. All the difference in the world could be made to a family unit and that child having a better tomorrow than they have today.
Completely. And Chris, feel free to weigh in on this next question as well. And this is specifically to you and Chris as parents. How can we get this subject of masking and other wider subjects around autism, PDA, etc.? How do we get it out of being something that only really crops up 1 week of the year? And how do we weave it into everyday conversations within the education system?
It's a difficult one because it has to start from the top down. There's a lot of teachers that are more than willing to learn and discuss about PDA, ADHD, autism, but it's having the opportunity to learn it in the first place. Yeah. And we are talking about from the very top, we're talking the education secretary. We've got to start right at the top, and then it's got to cascade down all the way down to the bottom, where this type of training and questions are normalized, and then it's an everyday routine and they know what to look for. And like I said, a lot of these teachers are very, very good at their job. Just because they don't know about it does not mean they don't want to learn from it.
That's it. And this is it. Most teachers I know are wonderful people who want the best for their kids in their class, and they're acting out of what their understanding is, what they've been taught, what's become, like you say, from the top. And unless it comes down from the top that these are things to look out for, and understanding autism, accepting autism, and celebrating autism become part of any disability. Celebrating that diversity. We celebrate diversity in so many ways in our world, in this country, and it's a wonderful thing. You know, we've got traffic lights in Trafalgar Square that, you know, are gender neutral and all this kind of stuff. It's like we celebrate our diversity in this country, or we're supposed to. That's what we say. But disability and hidden disabilities get left at the bottom of that pile. And I think it's the wrong thing. And if it comes from the top that these things... And it's about making people's lives better, and that's what teachers, in my experience, all want to do. Every teacher I've experienced wants the best for the kids that they're looking after for 8 hours a day, 5 days a week. They want to see them flourish. They have a genuine care and a genuine love. But this stuff hasn't filtered through, and masking is not a new thing. It's not I've made videos on masking, but again, that's educating parents who watch it and hopefully the occasional teacher who might stumble across it and see that. It's why I always sort of want to use the Autism Awareness Week platform. Is like, if we can make a message get out there about one specific area of autism that really does affect so many people at such an early age in particular, it would make a world of difference to people's lives.
And I suppose it's all about changing, rather than changing what people think. Because you can do that. I imagine if you didn't have such a cool head on you, you'd be outside the school singing "We're Not Going to Take It" by Starship. and what have you. So rather than doing that and trying to change what people think, it's about changing how they think.
Well, yeah, I think so. First of all, that was actually by Twisted Sister, not Starship, but we won't go there.
Got him.
No, seriously, you're right. It's going to take some intelligent thinking behind it to get this out there and understood. It's not something that is going to just... It's not osmosis. It's not just going to naturally ooze through and spread. There's an element there that can happen to some degree. But really, like Chris said, I completely agree. It's got to come from the top. It's got to become something that is, we are going to make a point of being more inclusive with the students we have who have hidden disabilities.
It does need to come from the top. A few years back, I did start an online campaign to do something called Disability Awareness Week. So Martin Lewis has been campaigning for like 12 years to get money, you know, people educated on money in schools for 10, 12 years. And he's finally managed to do it, and he's got his own TV show. And so I started a campaign. It was extremely unsuccessful on doing a Disability Awareness Week, where 1 week is dedicated to schools where they would teach kids from a primary school age or secondary school age about disability, hidden disabilities and mental health issues to make sure they're aware of it when they go out into the real world. Because you don't experience it really. I mean, you probably have one or two disabled kids in the school who go, oh yeah, he's in a wheelchair, so what? But until you're in the real world, you don't know about mental health issues. You do not know about hidden disabilities. And the only way of making people aware of it is if you do it at an early age, so they are fully aware of it and they know how to spot it or have some idea about it. And then it becomes less of a thing. And that's the only way that it can ever be introduced into society, if we actually do it in school. And I think school is the silver bullet for all disabilities if we do get the education system right.
I absolutely agree. It is not going to flourish on its own. People don't go out their way to look for disabilities or to look for autism. They don't go out their way for it. And while it's great, we've got these campaigns, autism awareness, which is obviously questionable and then over to acceptance.
Yeah.
Nobody's going out of the way. The people will maybe retweet it if they're not involved in the world and want to feel good about themselves. They may retweet a few things to give themselves a pat on the back, but nobody's going out of their way to look for it. So it genuinely does have to start with education first, and it has to be done in a classroom setting. Otherwise it will not flourish. We live in a society where we have to be entertained or we don't take it in. Unfortunately, disability and autism isn't a form of entertainment when you're trying to learn about it, so it will always be ignored.
Completely agree.
No, completely agree. And to quote that amazing band Twisted Sister, we're not gonna take it. We're not gonna take it anymore. Editing's a thing. Fuck you, Duncan. Well, gentlemen, it's been a pleasure as always. I'm glad we got through the difficult album. I don't know why you let me present this thing. I really don't. I'm doing it. We're leaving. Hope you'll have a good week. Enjoy your Easter holidays. I know I will. Take care, gentlemen. See you next time.